Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Killer Psyche ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
A listener note, this episode contains adult content and is not suitable for everyone. Please be advised. When I was growing up, my brothers and I really looked forward to Saturday mornings. We would wake up and my mother would have what we like to call a sugar breakfast. My two older brothers would usually choose pancakes or bacon and eggs, but my younger brother and I would opt for Frosted Flakes cereal, called Sugar Frosted Flakes back then. You remember the commercials? A cartoon tiger named Tony would always say they're great at the end of the spot. I also really liked a cereal called Cocoa Puffs, which was basically little balls of rice and corn covered in chocolate. For some reason, my dad drew the line at this cereal, even though Frosted Flakes had just as much sugar. Maybe it was the chocolate for breakfast that threw him. I don't know. Probably so. He was a conservative guy. Cocoa Puffs had a mascot named Sunny the Cuckoo Bird, who, by the way, looked nothing like a cuckoo bird. In the commercials, Sunny would try desperately to stay focused on whatever task he was doing, but would inevitably lose his concentration. Everything he did would remind him of his favorite cereal. Sunny would devolve from a seemingly normal bird, a normal bird who talked, that is, into a frenetic animal. His eyes would roll around and he would flip uncontrollably, the whole time yelling, "I'm cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs." This was, of course, adapted by kids as a way to call out a peer when they were acting wild or strange, or to describe someone who they felt was, for lack of a better word, crazy. Adam Polk, the first son of Susan and Felix, took the witness stand during the trial for the murder of his father. He had to tolerate his father's accused murderer, who was representing herself, cross-examine him for days. During the third day, Adam's patience had run out. After a particularly outrageous question, Adam finally lost his cool. "You're bonkers," he said. "You're cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs." This outburst and the laughter in the courtroom did not deter the defense. Neither did the fact that the accused murderer, Susan Polk, was cross-examining her own son. As a Killer Psyche listener, you'll love Audible's new pulse-pounding collection of exclusive thrillers that are guaranteed to keep you on the edge of your seat. With captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, and dynamic performances, their titles are brought to life. I recommend The Killer Across the Table by John Douglas, my mentor at the FBI Behavioral Science Unit, and his co-author, Mark Olshacker. It is great. And as an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/psyche or text psyche to 500-500. That's audible.com/psyche or text psyche to 500-500. Killer Psyche is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
From Wondery and Treefort, I'm Candace DeLong, and this is Killer Psyche. I've spent 5 decades studying people's minds through my work as an FBI profiler and psychiatric nurse. I've interviewed lots of murderers, including serial killers. And the question of why they did it is what I get asked time and time again. It's difficult to get a satisfying answer without diving deep into their mindsets. So that's what we're doing. And I will give you my best analysis in this series of what made them do what they did. This episode is part 2 of Susan Polk, Deadly Therapy. We talked about Susan Polk's tumultuous childhood leading up to the murder of her husband, Felix. I would recommend that you check out that episode before listening to this one. But as a reminder, Susan Polk met her future husband, Felix, when she was just 15. She was his patient. Felix was a prominent psychologist who specialized in treating adolescents. We ended the previous episode when she married Felix. She was 24 years old. He was 50. In 1983, 2 years after their wedding, their first son, Adam, was born. After his birth, Susan became obsessed with her son's safety. When Adam was 18 months old, he bit the tail of the family dog. Susan interpreted this as a sign that Adam had been subjected to satanic rituals at his daycare. She maintained that after she had dropped him off, Adam had been whisked away to a warehouse, put in a cage, and made to watch other babies being sexually assaulted and tortured. Now, some of you might be scratching your head, thinking, how could anyone believe that? Well, in the mid-1980s, there was a pervasive fear that ran through America that very young children were in grave peril from adults that practiced Satanism, also known as devil worshipers. This bizarre belief claimed that there were practicing Satanists everywhere. They believed these Satanists worked in schools, daycare centers, churches, hospitals, the FBI, CIA, local sheriff's departments, medical centers, etc. They were convinced these Satanists kidnapped very young children, flew them on airplanes or bused them to warehouses or churches, where they sexually assaulted them in the most horrible ways. They thought the Satanists sacrificed and cannibalized the children or buried them alive. And they believed all of this with no evidence at all. I'm not kidding. This pervasive and malignant belief, in hindsight, developed a name: the Satanic Panic. This is defined now as a moral panic and consists of over 12,000 unsubstantiated cases of satanic ritual abuse, also known as SRA. Starting in the United States in the 1980s, it spread throughout many parts of the world by the late 90s. And in some areas, it still persists even today. The panic originated in 1980 with the publication of Michelle Remembers, a book co-written by Canadian psychiatrist Lawrence Pazder and his patient and future wife, Michelle Smith. The book used the now discredited practice of recovered memory therapy to make sweeping, lurid claims about Smith's supposed experience with satanic ritual abuse. After the book's release, allegations arose throughout much of the United States and involved reports of physical and sexual abuse in the context of occult or satanic rituals. In its most extreme form, the allegations involved a conspiracy of a global satanic cult whose members consisted of the wealthy and powerful world elite. This group was accused of breeding children for human sacrifices and child pornography. The FBI, however, never found evidence of this or even evidence of satanic cults communicating with each other. There was no organization of these practitioners. This makes me think of the Salem witch trials or McCarthyism, with people becoming so wrapped up in the hysteria that they lost all reasoning and logic. A scary side effect of all of this was that many adults whose professions were tied to interactions with children were arrested, even jailed without a trial, based on mere accusations. Many innocent people were ruined by these outrageous claims. Believe it or not, the concept of an organized global satanic child abusing cult turned out to be all nonsense, based on the deranged minds of a few mentally ill people and their overzealous and wildly imaginative enablers, some of whom were psychotherapists. After Susan Polk came to the conclusion that her son, Adam, was a victim of Satanists, she would drive him around their hometown, asking him to point out the pedophiles from the alleged satanic group. She interpreted any babbled response from her 18-month-old son to be proof of guilt. And she even publicly accused a famous nature photographer of being a member of a satanic pedophile cult. Incredibly, Felix supported his wife's claims, maintaining he too had observed signs of abuse in Adam's behavior. Felix publicly proclaimed that his own son, Adam, had been victimized by a satanic cult. Although he had no proof of this, and an FBI investigation into the claims found nothing, Felix still claimed that his preschool-aged son had witnessed numerous children being raped, consumed, and buried alive. He said that Adam alone had survived and lived to tell the tale. Given that Adam was a toddler at the time, it is remarkable to think that he was able to relay all of this specific information to Felix. Susan and Felix established a group of concerned activist parents called Enough. The couple organized rallies denouncing the pedophiles and demanding political legislation to protect the children. Susan was even interviewed in the local newspapers about the so-called satanic threat. Felix even had then 5-year-old Adam on stage with him at a public presentation in 1988. At this event, he claimed that Adam not only witnessed multiple unspeakable acts, but that he too was sodomized by Satanists. Reportedly, the boy smiled and nodded his head as his father held him up to the audience. There is a reason why we no longer condone images or details about a child's abuse to be made public. As a psychologist, Felix must have known that exploiting his child in such a way could have ramifications for his son later in life. To me, it shows that Felix only wanted to increase his own popularity, and that he had no problems using his children as he had once used Susan as an endorsement for how wonderful a therapist he was.
Killer Psyche is sponsored by BetterHelp. With social gatherings picking up for spring, it can be easy to ignore your social battery and spread yourself too thin. Whether you thrive around people or you prefer some more alone time, therapy can give you the self-awareness to build a social life that does not drain your battery. Your therapist can help you identify triggers and appropriate coping mechanisms so you can continue to build helpful habits. Plus, therapy can be beneficial for everyone, not just for those who've experienced major trauma. So if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, so it's convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/psyche today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/psyche. Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe as ex-homicide detective Roy Freeman. Freeman is forced to piece together the brutal evidence from a decade-old murder investigation. With only instincts to trust, he faces a chilling truth. Sometimes it's best to let sleeping dogs lie. I'm really looking forward to this movie. I have interviewed some people that had a fractured mind regarding traumatic events. This is going to be good. Watch Sleeping Dogs now on digital on sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/Wondery. According to the book Seduced by Madness by Susan Pogosh, a friend of Susan's from college said that Susan, and I quote, strenuously objected to Felix's use of cocaine, which he had snorted during his grad school days and continued to use for years afterward. Cocaine has a long history of abuse among psychotherapists. One prominent example was Sigmund Freud, who penned some of his best-known theories about the unconscious mind while high on cocaine. But Felix's reaction to the drug was less fruitful. Susan complained that when he was high, Felix sometimes actually hallucinated and became impotent. And it's true, cocaine can have that effect on men. Eventually, Susan had two more sons, Eli and Gabriel. On a family trip to Disneyland in 1998, Susan had a very public breakdown in front of all three of her children. She sobbed uncontrollably because she suddenly remembered that her brother had beaten her up and her father had molested her as a child. Felix tried to console her and explain to their confused sons that their mother had a very traumatic childhood and was now remembering things. This epiphany was the result of Felix's adoption of the repressed memory concept. In this theory, a lack of memories or crucial events suggests that there are repressed memories in the subconscious. However, according to family members, the majority of Susan's recollections were found not to be credible. She had a delusional disorder, and that affected her interpretation of the world. At Susan's trial, the prosecutor, reading to the jury from the American Psychiatric Association's Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Mental Disorders, 4th edition, also known as the DSM-IV, claimed that Susan suffered from persecutory delusional disorder. Although
Oddly enough, no qualified expert took the stand to confirm that diagnosis. Let's look at that disorder. According to the latest DSM-5, delusional disorder is an illness characterized by at least 1 month of delusions, but no other psychotic symptoms. So what exactly is a delusion? It is an intensely strong false belief that persists despite overwhelming evidence to the contrary. And the delusion is unshakable. As a psychiatric nurse, I worked with many patients over the years who suffered from psychotic delusions. In episode 11 of Killer Psyche, we discuss Richard Chase, also known as the Sacramento Vampire Killer. I explained his bizarre delusion that his blood was turning to dirt and that he could only survive by replacing it with another person's blood. This delusion led him to commit 5 murders. That is known as a psychotic delusion. Psychotic means out of touch with reality. However, there are other types of delusions that are far less extreme. For example, non-bizarre delusions are about situations that actually could occur in real life, such as being followed or persecuted, or being loved romantically by someone, like a celebrity, or having a specific medical disorder, or lastly, being deceived by one's romantic partner, and that is known as irrational jealousy. Bizarre delusions like the vampire killers are clearly implausible and are frequently accompanied by hallucinations, such as hearing voices that are not real. But let me be clear. Non-bizarre delusions are not real or true, but they are totally real to the individual who believes them. There are also cases where these delusions are somewhat based in reality, but have become highly exaggerated in the individual's mind. Persecutory delusional disorder, which the prosecutor declared was Susan's problem, was previously known as paranoid disorder. This is a serious mental illness in which a person cannot tell what is real from what is imagined. This subtype pertains to individuals with delusions where they believe they are being conspired against, spied or cheated on, poisoned or drugged, harassed or followed, or generally obstructed in the pursuit of their goals. In many ways, that description for Susan is right on target. After all, at one point she claimed that her parents had killed someone with a hammer and that her mother was not her mother. Susan made her mother take a DNA test to prove their genetic relationship. However, she still did not completely believe the positive results. That doesn't surprise me. Remember, for the delusional person, their delusion is unshakable. But what if Susan's beliefs, or some of them, were 100% true? Does that negate the diagnosis of persecutory delusional disorder? No, it does not. And if we believe some of her claims, and I do, does that mean we should believe all of them? No, it does not. And what if Felix had his own agenda and really was manipulating his wife in such a way that she believed everything he said, no matter how outrageous? It appears to me that is exactly what he did, starting when she was only 15 years old and began to see him for psychological help. All 3 of the Polk boys were intelligent, handsome, and athletic. They were also very popular with their classmates. However, they did not comprehend how unusual their mother's behavior and their father's response to it appeared to the outside world. Unfortunately, Susan did not enforce much discipline. As the children grew, she imposed very few barriers on their behavior. She would allow them to skip school, and if they got into trouble, it was always the teacher's fault. At some point, each of them was suspended for fighting. Later, Eli, the middle child, was arrested and incarcerated for assault and placed in a detention center for teenagers. Susan convinced Eli that his father had persuaded the authorities to incarcerate him. Of the three Polk sons, Eli was the closest to Susan and believed the story she fed him, which resulted in Eli hating his father. This is not to excuse any of Felix's behavior. He would point out to his sons that their mother was mentally ill and they should not take her seriously. He still treated Susan as if she were his 15-year-old patient, and that was beginning to wear her down. Susan felt that she was trapped in the relationship and that Felix would never allow her to leave. She claims he threatened to kill her or himself if she left. Felix's belief in Susan's recovered memories and his encouragement that she continue to uncover more ultimately backfired on him. Susan began to feel that she had been manipulated into loving Felix and that perhaps she did not really love him at all. On the morning of her 40th birthday in 1997, she woke up and asked him what the exact date was that they first had sex. This question developed into Susan having recovered memories of being hypnotized, drugged, and raped by Felix when she was his 15-year-old patient. Armed with this revelation, Susan threatened to inform the school where Felix taught, the professional board that accredited him, and all of his patients, essentially destroying his life and career. Felix was at a loss about what to do. He did not want the information that he'd had an illicit, unethical, and illegal affair with his teenage patient to become public knowledge. He also did not want to admit that his wife, who he once held up as his prize patient, was paranoid, delusional, and beyond his ability to help. After all, as we talked about in episode 1, he had supposedly, quote, cured her of her schizophrenia years before. Susan's mental state quickly deteriorated. She told anyone who would listen that she was a psychic and had predicted the 9/11 terrorist attacks. Susan stated that she had passed this information on to Felix, whom she insisted was a member of the Israeli intelligence agency, Mossad. But she claimed that Felix only alerted the Israelis, not the United States government. Gabriel would later say on the witness stand that every Saturday, his mother would try to, quote, find codes in the newspaper that secret agents had put there. In January 2001, she took a trip alone to Yosemite. Susan ingested a bottle of aspirin and then called Felix. He alerted 911 and she was taken to a hospital. Again, like when she was 15, Felix had hospital administrators release her to his custody. In November of 2001, Susan filed for divorce. Eli and Gabriel wrote letters to the court expressing their desire to live with their mother. However, after Eli was arrested for assault in February of 2002, Susan changed her mind about custody. She informed Felix's lawyer that she was relinquishing all rights to her children. Felix ignored her, knowing that given her mercurial nature, it would be only a matter of weeks till she would reverse that decision. And of course, she did. In the fall of 2002, while Susan was away in Montana, she became enraged to hear Gabriel say nice things about his father. She felt that Felix had already convinced her older son that she was delusional. So she wanted to return home to ensure that he would not get to her youngest son as well. At the same time, Susan found out that Felix had gotten full custody of the boys and that her alimony settlement had been substantially cut by 75%, effectively leaving her unable to support herself. Infuriated, she told Felix that she was going to kill him. A neighbor claimed that Felix called him the day before the murder and told him that he had just gotten off the phone with his soon-to-be ex-wife. According to the neighbor, Felix, quote, said that Susan called him, said she was in Montana, and she was coming back to kill him. And I said, "Have you called the police?" He said, "I told Susan I wouldn't." I said, "Felix, you want to live?" "Yes." "Then you call the police. This is not a joke." And it obviously was not a joke, since Felix was murdered in the middle of the early morning the next day. On October 14, 2002, the night when Gabriel called the police and reported that his mother had murdered his father, Susan was shocked. She had not considered that Gabriel would not back her claims of self-defense. For all of her brilliance, Susan did not understand that by murdering their father, she effectively destroyed her relationship with her sons.
This episode is brought to you by June's Journey. Unleash your inner sleuth and step into the glamorous 1920s. Uncover scandalous family secrets and solve the mysterious murder of June Parker's sister. With dazzling hidden object scenes and riveting storylines in each chapter, June's Journey invites you to a thrilling era of mystery and romance. And now, June needs your help, detective. Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. Your adventure awaits.
When police arrived at the Polk family home on October 14th, they separated Susan and Gabriel. Gabriel was initially interviewed as a suspect, but police quickly eliminated him. He recounted the events leading up to the murder, including his mother's constant threats. For 4 years, Susan had talked about drowning Felix, drugging him, hitting him with her car, and shooting him. Sitting in the interrogation room, Gabriel still believed his mother had carried through with her threat to shoot his father. Cameras recorded his phone conversation with his older brother, Adam. Gabriel told him, and I quote, "The crazy bitch shot him." Of course, she did not shoot him. She hit him on the back of the head and stabbed him 27 times. But the sentiment remained that her children thought that she was mentally ill and knew that she had killed him. After Susan was arrested, Adam took charge of family matters and placed Gabriel with a family friend. Susan initially was grateful to them, but weeks later, she turned on the family, accusing them of embezzling money from the Polk Family Trust. She also believed that they influenced Gabriel against her. The brothers reported that this was common behavior for their mother. She would initially be warm to someone and then accuse them of conspiring against her. That description perfectly fits someone suffering from persecutory delusional disorder. Felix's twin brother hired a lawyer to oversee the assets in the estate. However, Susan used the money to control her sons. When Adam needed to use her car to drive to his summer job, she only agreed to do so if he would remove Gabriel from the family he was living with. In October of 2004, Adam and Gabriel filed a wrongful death suit against their mother. They wanted money for their school tuition and living expenses. Susan threatened that if they did not end the lawsuit, she would spend down all of the assets. This is exactly what they feared she was already doing. In the end, they were awarded only $300,000. This from an estate that before the murder was estimated to be worth $5 million. For 2 days after the murder, Susan denied killing Felix. Later, when police and her lawyers explained the mounting forensic evidence against her, she changed course to say it was self-defense. She stuck with this argument throughout her trial, even though there had been a history of her threats and a police report 4 days prior to the murder. What she would not agree to was any defense based on insanity. The trial for the murder of Felix Polk began in the spring of 2007. It became a media circus. Susan went through lawyer after lawyer until she decided finally to represent herself. There's a saying that when a person decides to represent themselves, they have a fool for a client. I believe this statement to be very apropos in Susan's case. Surprisingly, Susan was capable of sowing doubt in the prosecutor's case against her. She pointed out that the police investigation had failed to definitively identify which knife in the kitchen was the murder weapon. She found a pathologist who testified that Felix's undiagnosed heart disease was actually the cause of his death, not the stab wounds, as if the jury would overlook the 27 stabs. She lessened the prosecutor's pathologist's claims that the wounds were significant enough to be the cause of death. She also pushed the narrative that Felix was abusive and addicted to cocaine, although no one would corroborate either claim. Susan called for a mistrial almost daily. She objected to the prosecutor so often and continued speaking after the judge overruled her so many times that the judge removed her from the courtroom. She also insulted and taunted the prosecutor, calling him a frat boy, a liar, and believe it or not, a crybaby. The prosecutor later stated that he had never met a more hateful person and that Susan had effectively worn him down. Susan provoked the judge, prosecutor, and witnesses, but then seemed baffled about why they responded to her with anger. She was also unprepared for how angry her sons were with her. Two of her sons, Gabriel and Adam, both testified for the prosecution. Eli was the only one to testify for the defense. Susan questioned them for days on the witness stand, trying to get them to admit that it was their domineering and controlling father who was mentally unfit. She seemed to object more to being labeled delusional than anything else. That doesn't surprise me. But here's the thing about a delusion. It's not just a passing thought. It's woven into the fabric of the individual's brain, personality, everything. For them to accept that they are truly delusional would mean everything they thought and everything that guided their behavior didn't exist. Susan was her own worst enemy. Her claims that Felix was a member of the Mossad and a traitor to the United States underscored that she was both paranoid and delusional. The jury concluded that while Felix had violated boundaries between therapist and patient, Susan was responsible for murdering Felix. Remember, the victim was not on trial for his prior bad acts. Felix was not on trial for seducing Susan as a child. Ultimately, Susan was found guilty of second-degree murder and sentenced to 16 years to life. She became eligible for parole in 2019, but it was denied. You probably won't be surprised to hear that Susan argued with every member of the parole board and eventually had to be removed. Currently, Susan May Polk is incarcerated in the California Institution for Women in Chino, California. She will be eligible for parole again in 2029. Next week on Killer Psyche, Joseph Edward Duncan. If you like our show, please give us a rating and review. Follow Killer Psyche on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, the Wondery app, or wherever you're listening right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app to listen 1 week early and ad-free. In the episode notes, you'll find some links and offers from our sponsors. Please support them. By supporting them, you help us offer the show for free. Another way you can support the show is by filling out a survey at wondery.com/survey. From Wondery and Treefort Media, this is Killer Psyche. I'm your host, Candace DeLong. This episode was written and produced by Lisa Ammerman and Julie Burke. Edited by Joshua Morales and Maxwell Carney, with research and editing assistance from Ann Liu. Our senior audio producer is Tom Monahan. Renee Levesque is production manager. And Haley Mandelberg is production coordinator. Brandon Clark and Lindsay Whistler are production assistants. And the line producer is Oscar Guida. Our executive producers are Kelly Garner and Lisa Ammerman for Treefort and Marsha Louie and Aaron O'Flaherty for Wondery. The series is produced by Wondery and Treefort Media.
Dreaming of starting your own podcast? Make it a reality with the Movo Pod Kit. The podcast bundle designed for aspiring podcasters ready to share their voice with the world. The Pod Kit is equipped with everything you'll need to sound like a pro while being backed by a one-year warranty with a US-based support team. Start your podcasting journey today with the Movo Pod Kit and let the world hear your story. Movo, creators wanted.